Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. Our lives, our voices. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, how recent federal crackdowns on medical marijuana are affecting people with AIDS and other illnesses. The effectiveness of cannabis for treating symptoms related to HIV, AIDS, cancer, depression, and many other illnesses is widely recognized and supported by research. California, 15 other states, and the District of Columbia have decriminalized medical use of marijuana, but it's still illegal under federal law. More than a year ago, the Obama administration announced that it would back off of the Fed's previous enforcement of marijuana laws as long as growers and distributors were complying with state regulations. But this year, especially in the past few months, the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency has stepped up its raids of medical marijuana growers and dispensaries in California and other states. The Department of Justice claims that many operators are abusing states' medical marijuana laws to engage in plain old drug profiteering. Federal officials say that, for example, most pot grown in California under state and local medical use permits for California patients ends up in other states and even other countries. What are the medical uses of marijuana? How is the ongoing conflict between federal and state law and the recent series of raids affecting HIV and other patients who depend on cannabis for pain relief and other benefits? At least three dispensaries in San Francisco alone have closed this year. And how can this ongoing skirmish be resolved? Here to talk about this are Dr. Jean Talleyrand, the founder and CEO of Medican, an Oakland-based operator of 21 medical clinics throughout California where doctors evaluate patients and prescribe cannabis and other alternative therapies. Dr. Talleyrand has been nominated to serve on San Francisco's Medical Marijuana Task Force. Karen Woodson, Operations Director for the Green Cross, a mobile dispensary in San Francisco. That is, the Green Cross delivers medical cannabis. She is also the former chief congressional lobbyist for Americans for Safe Access, which promotes legal cannabis access for patients and researchers. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Eric.
And David Goldman, a core member of the San Francisco chapter of Americans for Safe Access and a former patient advocate on the city's medical cannabis task force. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being here on Out in the Bay. So first of all, briefly, we can get into more depth later, but what are the chief medical uses of marijuana? Dr. Jean Talleyrand, do you want to start?
We've been around Medican. Our company's been around since 2004, and we've evaluated over 250,000 patients for medical cannabis use. And our top diagnoses are low back pain, anxiety and depression, neck pain, insomnia, and cervical pain. So mostly pain, chronic pain, I would say, is a predominant diagnosis that we see.
And Karen or David, do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Well, I think so far as the uses for in particular concerning HIV and AIDS, I'll let the doctor comment about specifics, but one thing I remember reading in PAWS magazine about a year ago in an article they published was a quote from a young DJ named Evan McIntyre, and he said, "My meds are saving my life, but marijuana is saving me from my meds." And I think that is, if we were really talking about the experience of people living with HIV or AIDS, their experience with marijuana is that, of course, it's not a cure. Of course, it's not going to treat the underlying condition of HIV or AIDS, but it's going to help them deal with the symptoms and effects of the drugs used to treat that condition. Mm-hmm. So in terms of taking or lessening the amount of drugs you're taking on your HIV regimen, I think medical cannabis can be an important adjunct therapy.
And David, you told me before we went on the air that your husband is HIV positive and has used medical marijuana for various things. How does it help him?
It helps him fight his nausea from the medications he takes, which occurs occasionally, and it's done wonders for his appetite. And on a side note, he had a case of shingles. We don't know if it was HIV related or not, and the only thing that seemed to help his pain was cannabis.
I'm curious to know also if AIDS patients and doctors, were they on the forefront of decriminalizing medical cannabis back in the, 80s and early 90s when the AIDS epidemic was really, Dr. Talleyrand?
I would say yes. The history is long and involved, but the government had a program to provide cannabis to patients who qualified. And during the AIDS epidemic, they received a lot of applications, justified applications, which made them pretty much nearly shut down that program. And at some point, there were hundreds of patients involved, and now there are just a handful.
So in 1996, California voters passed Proposition 215, allowing medical use of marijuana in the state, knowing that it would still be against federal law. And under the Bush administration, federal raids on growers and pot clubs in California and other states intensified. But then in May 2010, President Obama's administration said the feds would back off as long as growers, distributors, and retailers were following state regulations. So what's happened since, and where are we now?
Good question.
I mean, is there still confusion about this? I mean, what's...
The Ogden Memorandum in 2009 said that cannabis providers in complete and unambiguous compliance with state law would not likely be subject to federal prosecution. But then a Cole Memorandum in 2010 in June so-called clarified that statement and said that whereas they wouldn't be going after patients and their immediate caregivers, they would go after large cultivators and suppliers of cannabis. And in October of this year, four U.S. attorneys issued a joint set of statements where they said that basically they were going to go after virtually all the dispensaries in California because they hadn't seen one that wasn't run as a for-profit enterprise, even though under the California Attorney General's guidelines, they were running supposedly as not-for-profits.
So, and I understand that just in October, a little over a month ago, there was a grower in Mendocino County, his name is escaping me right now, Matthew Cohen, I believe, who ran an organic medical cannabis plantation. Is that the right word? I'm not sure of the terminology here. But he had been doing this in compliance with Mendocino County ordinance and was sort of seen as a model grower because he was cooperating with law enforcement and law enforcement was cooperating with him, making sure he had the right number of plants, tracking the plants and all that stuff. And he got busted just last month. So what are growers and retailers now wary of? Karen Woodson.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of points that were made in that statement. I mean, one of the things, I don't think we're ever going to be able to answer what changed. I don't know if this is coming from, you know, higher-ups in Washington, D.C., or if this is a decision that's been left exclusively to the U.S. prosecutors here in California. But certainly what has changed is that this is just a new tactic, right? Since 1996, the federal government has used tactic after tactic, strategy after strategy, in an effort to undermine state and local law, to occupy the space that our state and local government has traditionally occupied in terms of setting their own local drug policies, their own local health policies, so on and so forth. And first they started with doctors, that didn't work. Then they came after patients, that didn't work. Then they came after collectives, that didn't work. Now they're going after growers. And so this is just an ongoing fight on the flashpoint of medical marijuana. And what's unfortunate is that those operators that are operating and in strict compliance with both state and local law are sort of being caught up in sort of a political flashpoint, sort of a hot button issue that it's hard to gauge, you know, what kind of support that has here in California, given the number of medical cannabis patients, the money that the state collects on behalf of our sales taxes paid to the state, but also just the wide public support for this issue across the state of California.
Dr. Talleyrand.
You know, I think what the problem is that it's internal. It's within each of us. We all, this is an old plant. It's been around humans since 8,000 BC. It's been used as medicine, documented as medicine, since 2700 BC. It's clear that it's been medicinal, and only has been outlawed in the U.S. since the 1930s. Not very long, considering a long history of use. There's a lot of research out there just in 1 year alone, 13,000 publications on cannabinoids and how they affect the body. There's a ton of research showing that it's beneficial. So why are we having trouble with it? Well, the trouble's been around since we've been using it because it's got so many uses. It can be used as an industrial plant. It can be used as medicinal plant. It has the spiritual effects. I think it creates a problem with each one of us in accepting its use as medicine and being able to be clear, this is medicine for a particular diagnosis, and maybe sometimes it's used recreationally, but maybe sometimes it's used medicinally, and we need to clarify what that means among each other so that we don't have this problem of one day it's all good for everyone, and then the next day our sources are getting raided and punished like they were criminals after thousands of years of use. It's all of a sudden turned its door, you know.
And the fundamental question I think that your listeners need to be asking themselves, in addition to those that represent us at the state, local, and federal level, are these sort of tactics, are these constant raids, this constant desire to undermine California's medical marijuana law, a responsible and appropriate use of federal resources at this moment in time? There's tons of issues that the DOJ could be focused on beyond the issue of medical cannabis. And I have to ask the question, as a border state, as a state that deals with bigger drug problems related to Mexico and related to fact that we have a multi-hundred mile border with open water, I just have to ask, really, the DOJ's priorities are focused on law-abiding medical cannabis dispensing collective operators and their grow sites? I mean, it's just, it doesn't seem logical, and I think the response, that will not change until voters demand that change from the people that represent them.
Well, let me ask you what kind of fear or reluctance, or how is it affecting patients' ability to actually get what they need? David Goldman, Americans for Safe Access.
Well, we have three dispensaries that have closed in the city in response to their landlords getting letters threatening asset forfeiture, where the landlord might face prison up to 40 years in jail, lose all the property that he or she owns, and have to give back all the rental income plus penalties and interest that they had received from dispensaries to whom they were renting. Now, my question is, if this keeps up and they go after all the dispensaries in San Francisco one by one, another one today, a fourth one just got a letter sent to their landlord for asset forfeiture, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to go back to the parks and buy medicine from some street thug, from some gang member, from some cartel representative that hasn't been tested like the dispensaries test their medicine for mold, pesticide, and fungus? Sometimes I need a particular type of cannabis that's high in the cannabinoid CBD, cannabidiol, which helps with swelling and post-surgical inflammation. And what am I supposed to do? The chances of me getting that from the street are practically zero. I depend on the dispensaries to provide me with high-quality medicine where I know it's free of mold, pesticide, and fungus because it's been laboratory-tested, and also that the cannabinoid percentages in it have been verified, so I know how potent the medicine is.
So you're getting it from a source which you trust more, right?
Completely trust. I couldn't trust at all anything I bought from the streets.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but here in San Francisco, we have, you know, as qualified patients or caregivers, within the jurisdictional bounds of San Francisco, and for that matter, the East Bay, Oakland, and Marin County, we have the advantage of having regulation. So not only are you going to a source that you can trust, but more often than not, these sources are regulated by a local entity, either the Department of Health or some other way to verify that these places are licensed or permitted and undergo some sort of oversight beyond their simple existence.
So just like going to a massage therapist or a hair salon, you've got a state license that says this person's been checked out, this business has been checked out. They're not going to wreck your hair.
Absolutely.
The health department inspects the dispensaries.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Dr. Jean Talleyrand, the founder and CEO of Medican, an Oakland-based operator of 21 medical marijuana patient clinics in California, Karen Woodson, operations director of the Green Cross Dispensary in San Francisco, and David Goldman, a core member of Americans for Safe Access's San Francisco chapter. We're talking about medical marijuana for treating HIV, AIDS, and other ailments, and the ongoing dispute between state and local governments that allow medical marijuana and federal authorities who don't allow medical use of marijuana. I want to ask, you mentioned a few minutes ago, Dr. Talleyrand, you brought up history. Back, marijuana was prohibited in the 20s or 30s, and I'm curious to know what spurred that? Industrial hemp barons, manufacturers of other materials for rope, I've heard.
There's a lot of speculation, yeah. Yes. Here are some of the facts that the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 taxed industrial use of cannabis at $100 and taxed medical use of cannabis at $1. So just to describe...
$1 per what? Are you saying 1% or 100%? Or
At $1 per unit measure, whether
it was
an ounce
was.
Or...
Okay.
But there was a distinct discrepancy... between industrial use. And so somebody wanted to keep industrial use from happening. It took a lot more money to stop the industries from using this than it did for it to stop the general population from using it.
Now, Karen, you were a lobbyist, a congressional lobbyist for the Americans for Safe Access for how long?
For 5 years.
Okay. And what years were those? And during that time, how would you say the mood or...
2005 until this year.
And how did the receptivity of politicians to medical marijuana change over that time, federal lawmakers?
I think that we've seen a general... I mean, as more states have passed laws and as... more state and local entities have sought to create regulatory schemes that make safe and legal access to cannabis possible for patients, I think that we've seen a sort of, I wouldn't say an avalanche of support, but support is definitely there. It's stable, but it needs to grow. And part of that is, you know, we see a lot of support for medical cannabis use, the existence at the state level, but for some reason that's not transferring to the federal level. For instance, here in San Francisco, Representative Pelosi has been by and large absent on legislation introduced in the current Congress that would help rectify a lot of the situation, the conflict between state and federal law. These are bills that she has supported in the past, but for whatever reason, she is not supporting them now. I don't think that her office is necessarily changing their position on medical marijuana, but it's clear this isn't a priority for her office. So it's important for listeners who happen to be medical cannabis patients, who may have friends or relatives that are medical cannabis patients, or have friends or relatives involved in the medical cannabis field. I think it's important that those people take it upon themselves to say, this is a priority for me. The conflict between state and federal law, like David said, puts patients at great risk and leaves them with very few options for access. And it is important for those federal officials to sign on and grow their support as opposed to keep it stable.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The announcement of Barney Frank is a perfect example. I mean, Congressman Frank from Massachusetts has been... by far our most diligent leader on the issue of medical marijuana and, for that matter, marijuana legalization. But it's interesting because he doesn't come from a state that even has a medical marijuana law. In his absence, you know, we're gonna have to find a replacement for his level of support. And that's why it's important for voters, for listeners to be engaged, because in this day and age, unless you're making the 100 phone calls, unless you're doing, you know, the big attention grabbing moments, this Congress is just unable to pay attention.
Now, you mentioned that Nancy Pelosi had sort of deprioritized this issue, and I'm curious to know if you find that's also true of AIDS service organizations. Are they more reluctant than they used to be to support the medical use of marijuana?
I don't find that that's true at all. I think that there's, I mean, I used to, and in full disclosure, the Green Cross is a supporter of the San Francisco AIDS Foundation as part of our community programs. But I've seen a lot of articles, especially articles that detail the research history and sort of a lot of the new research that demonstrates medical cannabis may be useful for, say, neuropathic pain. A lot of the, general research that's out there concerning HIV and AIDS is about nausea and vomiting. But we've really broken a mold here in California through the Center of Medical Cannabis Research, looking specifically at neuropathic pain and HIV.
But Karen, I'm surprised that we don't see more people with HIV. I would think that our population would be a lot bigger than it is. And I'm wondering if patients are out there using cannabis to help tolerate their medicine or for their neuropathic pain, but not getting legal sources because they're uncertain about the environment, the political environment, whether they should support the federal laws or whether they should support the state laws.
I don't think there's any question that there are people living with HIV or AIDS who are self-medicating without sort of becoming legal into the system. That's unfortunate because I think that they enjoy a certain amount of criminal protection or protection from criminal law by participating in the system. But I've spent a lot of time at national AIDS conferences, at the International AIDS Conference, and I'm amazed when I was working for ASA, we'd have a big medical marijuana booth there, and the numbers of people that would come up to me and say, well, I smoke pot, but I'm not medical. And then when you would ask them, well, what are you using that product for? Why are you using marijuana? And they would say, well, it helps me sleep, or I can take my medication better. And it's not understanding that the use of medical marijuana is an adjunct or complementary therapy. It's not the primary therapy.
Right. It doesn't necessarily cure your AIDS or help you, but it helps you, as you said before, deal with the medicines that you need to take, perhaps.
And to be honest, and you'll be able to speak more directly to this, but my understanding is that the technology with HIV/AIDS drugs has advanced to a point where where the cocktail used to be really severe in the 1980s and early 1990s. The pharmaceutical technological advancements that have happened for HIV/AIDS drugs have made some of these side effects less severe than they used to be.
You're right, Karen, but there's still the side effects of having HIV or AIDS. There's the neuropathic pain. There's the anxiety from carrying an illness for that long. There are many reasons to use cannabis besides actually tolerating the medicine, which is a big reason to use it that I believe people are using it for, but not recognizing it as medicinal in a sense.
So let's get to a little bit of practical advice here. You mentioned being in the system or not. What are the advantages and disadvantages of registering with the state? Registering with the state is not required in California. It is in some other states. What is that? What are the ramifications of that? David, they're both looking at you.
Well, it's my understanding that if you have the state card, as I do, that you have more protection in a law enforcement encounter. It's my understanding that law enforcement is obligated to verify a state card, whereas they might not have the ability to verify a recommendation. Suppose I got one from a doctor, and his office is closed on Friday night till Monday. So
let me just back up a second here. If I have marijuana and I need it for medical reasons, in order to purchase it from a retailer or dispensary, I need to have at least a letter of recommendation from my doctor, which is not the same as a prescription, right. But I don't need to have a state ID card or anything like that.
California is the only medical marijuana state that does not require its medical marijuana patients who are in the system to get a state card. It's optional here.
Think about it. In simplistic terms, your recommendation, the paper recommendation, is your get-out-of-prosecution card, mm-hmm. so long as you're within the limits of the law. But your state ID card is your get-out-of-arrest card.
So that's the keep-out-of-jail.
The keep-out-of-jail is the recommendation, so long as you're within the limits of your county or local government. But in order to, you could potentially still be arrested. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that's not happening too often. But on the occasion it does happen, eventually you would go before a judge, you would show your recommendation, show that you are within, the limits of the law, and then be dismissed. But the state card is going to provide your get out of arrest card, so you don't have to do any of that.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you what our patients do. They tell me they do this because maybe California was the first state to have this law, so it causes them to be a little bit more wary, but they don't want to go get the state card. They would rather not have their name on a list if there's a list that exists. There's not necessarily protection as HIPAA might protect your health privacy. There's not necessarily protection once you release your name to the state. So they're not sure. They're wondering whether to do this. We don't sway them one side or the other. We try to answer any calls we get 24/7. We have a verification line that helps people stay out of jail. And if they wish to get the state card, we help them get the state card.
How do you fight the perception that the medical marijuana is just a ruse? I mean, I've heard how easy it can be, especially in San Francisco, to get a recommendation. It's not that hard. Pretty much, it seems like pretty much any old doctor would give it to you if you ask. I don't know if that's really true, but that's the word on the street, so to speak. David Goldman.
Well, first of all, you have to sign a statement that you have a legitimate medical need for medical marijuana. And even if it doesn't seem that glamorous-like, so to speak, you have HIV and you have wasting away syndrome, I don't think it's any less important that a person is using it for anxiety, for insomnia. Now, the recent U.S. attorney statement claimed that Melinda Haig in San Francisco claimed that she's seen people leave dispensaries who look healthy. And since when is a visual diagnosis by an attorney a replacement for an examination by a physician? How can they tell? For example, I have glaucoma, and I use cannabis for that. How can they tell if I leave a dispensary if I have glaucoma? I would venture to say that many people in dispensaries may look healthy but have back pain. One person in particular was a young man leaving the dispensary Spark in San Francisco, and they used to wonder why he was getting cannabis, because he didn't look sick, so to speak. 6 months later, he comes in, he's lost 50 pounds. It turns out all that time he had liver cancer, and they just couldn't tell.
I think to add to that, I would say, you know, no system is foolproof. And if we use the federal government's own statistics, I could tell you that right now, the use and abuse of prescription drugs far outweighs the use and abuse of all other illegal drugs combined. That's a serious problem. That doesn't say that because people abuse OxyContin or abuse the system or get it or use it inappropriately doesn't mean OxyContin doesn't have medical value. What's clear about the issue of medical cannabis is that we have, right now, a multitude of double-blind placebo-controlled trials that indicate medical marijuana, when smoked and inhaled, can provide a positive medical benefit. And so far as the FDA is concerned or any other regulation, the goal should be, how do we get this medication out to patients where there is a qualified physician that has provided that recommendation?
And Karen, I'd take it a step further and say it's better than OxyContin. Our patients are looking better. I've worked San Francisco General Hospital, seen thousands of patients in urgent care. I have never seen a better group of actually diagnosed patients that are getting better with cannabis that weren't getting better with the OxyContin that is dispensed out in your pharmacies. It's a wonderful medicine, and people are missing the point that we've got something great here.
It is. The frustrating part is just that the goalpost keeps moving. That marijuana, when they want us to prove medical value, and then we prove medical value, and they want us to compare it to another drug, but no other drug has to undergo that sort of comparison.
I've got to wrap there. Thank you so much. Where can people go to get more information? If you can quickly give me your websites, that'd be great.
TheGreenCross.org?
TheGreenCross.org.
SafeAccessNow.org.
SafeAccessNow.org for Americans for Safe Access.
And we're at www.medican.com. That's MEDICANN.com.
Wonderful. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Jean Talleyrand, the founder and CEO of Medican, an Oakland-based operator of 21 medical marijuana patient clinics in California. Karen Woodson, Operations Director of the Green Cross Dispensary in San Francisco, and David Goldman, a core member of the San Francisco chapter of Americans for Safe Access. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We've been producing Out in the Bay for 7 years now, and many of you have told us what a positive, entertaining, and informative show it is. We need your support. We thank KALW for studio use and airtime, but we receive no financial assistance. So please go to our website, outinthebay.com, and help us out. Out in the Bay is heard every Thursday evening on KALW. 91.7 FM at 7 o'clock Thursday evenings. On our website, you can find 6 months worth of archive shows, and you can also hear the show on demand. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening. Just